Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, which is a show where we try to cover the news from the past couple of weeks in the gaming industry, games-related everything, basically. We try to get across the internet, get all of the relevant, interesting information, and digest it before we serve it back to our little birds that just hatched. You're the birds in that terrible, terrible metaphors, dear listeners. Thankfully, I have with me Ed, who is going to try and stop me from making just those kinds of comparisons in the future of this episode. How's it going, Ed?
It's going well, but I wouldn't bet on too much on me not like preventing you from making terrible jokes, because I'm a fan of those. So,
thank you. So basically, you're enabling me. That's terrible, yeah. But I'm happy about it. So Ed, you're from the Four Players Network. You're usually in the background doing all the web stuff, and you're on the show here and there. But you're going to be full front and center today.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool. We have a pretty interesting show today. I'm refraining myself from making Destiny's expansion the center of the entire show because I'm enjoying it so much.
I heard they've finally given the opportunity. They have the time to explain now, right? Isn't that how it works?
Basically, yes. Now there are some things that do make sense. It's pretty incredible. We're going to get to that. And I have a whole lot of notes. But I understand that this is, you know, not this is sort of a personal thing that I'm in love with Destiny so much. And there are some actual news from Tokyo Game Show, if you're into that. There are we want to talk about the Apple TV and the implications it might have for the gaming scene. And there's news about Nintendo that now has a new president. We'll try and tell you who that guy is and what it means for Nintendo, and so what it means for the games industry in general. But first, Tokyo Game Show. It's a pretty massive event. It's every year, you know. It's the equivalent of, I would say, because of the place of Japan in the gaming industry, it's probably third behind E3 and Gamescom in terms of importance. It doesn't make as much noise for us here in the West, but certainly for those who enjoy Japanese games and Japan, even though it's not as big as it used to be, is a pretty big player in the gaming industry. So these things happen there at the Tokyo Game Show. They had a pretty good showing this time. It's 250,000 people showed up. That's up from last year. But one thing I wanted to point out numbers-wise is the number of mobile games that were presented. I don't know if you've looked at the notes already, Ed, but if you had to guess, well, if you have looked at the notes,
yeah,
you know.
But looking at it right now, so.
Darn it!
250 iOS and Android games there.
Yeah, that's 250 iOS and Android games, and some of you are probably thinking, well, that's not such a big deal. Well, the other console that is definitely on the rise and the biggest player in Japan now was the PS4 with just 100 games. So that is pretty
massive.
That
doesn't really surprise me that much, because Japan is known for being heavy in the mobile gaming department rather than the real console game. I know the thing we'll probably get to a little bit later, but the PS4 price drop that they did is in direct is directly to address the fact that not a lot of Japanese gamers buy big expensive consoles.
Yeah,
they're doing all their gaming on their phones.
It definitely, the like mobile gaming has taken up everywhere, but I think the place where it's become the most popular is probably Japan. Everyone is now playing on their phone, and it might be, you know, somewhat slightly silly games like Puzzle and Dragons and things like that, but it's more game centric than probably the games we see here in the West, like Candy Crush Saga. So it is more serious gaming, like core gaming on mobile phones. But yeah, definitely people are really getting into more into smartphone games than they are in the West. And you're right, the PlayStation price drop, let's get into it now. It was introduced at the PlayStation conference, which was a couple of days before the Tokyo Game Show started. And it was cool. It was okay. It was nonstop games. And still, because of the Japanese style, it was kind of sleep-inducing. But, you know...
Which is interesting, because they purposely skipped Gamescom. Microsoft, the big showing at Gamescom this year, and Sony purposely skipped it. And I'd always assumed that they were going to have a big show at the Tokyo Game Show, but they really didn't announce anything that, like, new software or anything that's coming out this fall.
I think it would be too late to announce something for this fall, I'm sure, but I think there it's really what we're seeing is what we're getting, which is, you know, games are going to come early 2016, and that's what it is, or early-ish 2016. But yeah, I guess the one big news was the price drop of the PlayStation, which is dropping from 40,000 yen to 35,000 yen. So it was already kind of cheaper. I can't remember the exact amount that 40,000 yen is.
So this article that I'm looking at right now says that it went from about 292. The new price is about $292 and 258 euros.
Right. So it used to be $330 or so, depending on the rate, of course. Yeah. So it was already kind of cheaper in Japan than it is in the West, and they're making it even cheaper. So that tells you. Now, of course, the popularity of the PlayStation 3 and the lack of games that appeal to Japanese consumers explain some of this, but still, the PlayStation is certainly suffering from a lack of interest in the Japanese, the PlayStation 4, in the Japanese public, and I'm guessing smartphones have something to do with it. The other thing I wanted to mention was that PlayStation Now is launching in Japan with the same, you know, 3 months, 1 month, 1 month subscription options. And there is a new one, which is renting a game for 200 yen. So 200 yen is about, what, a buck and a half? Something like that. Under $2, basically. And you can rent the game. I didn't manage to see how long you could play it. I'm guessing 24 hours, probably.
Yeah,
but that's a price that I could, you know, I could get on with. I know it's in the West, in the US, PlayStation Now is the cheapest price is for like 1 hour or 4 hours, something ridiculous. If it was for a full day, that's the only price they mentioned. So if it's for a full day, I could see that working.
Yeah, I mean, the cheapest thing that I could find is their 1 month plan for $20 over here. But yeah. I can't find something that talks about just like a single game.
Yeah, well, yeah, they do have those, but yeah, it's very expensive in the US. The cheapest one is actually the 3 months, which brings it down to about $15 a month if you go for 3 months. Yeah, but then you have to pay for the 3 months. So
I
obviously.
Mean, I'm not a user of PlayStation Now simply because like I don't really understand the point of having it. Well, that being said, I have a PlayStation 3 and a PlayStation 4. So I get my kind of backwards compatibility there by switching the input of my TV, not really booting up another thing.
Yeah, I think there is some interest, but the price is still a little bit too high. And also, you don't have PlayStation 4 games on there. I think somewhere down the line, they're working on it. They're working on the service. And I think down the line, in a couple of years, it might be cheap enough with enough games that it's actually going to be interesting. We're probably not there yet.
Yeah.
Except if you like, you know, there are a few good games. If you skipped PlayStation 3, honestly, there are good games that are available. You know, they have the Uncharted series. They have a bunch of games. Maybe, you know, it's worth looking at if you're a big gamer and you're in a lull. Obviously, it's not the case now. We're having lots of things to play at the moment. So
yeah.
And the other thing was that Project Morpheus is now officially called PlayStation VR. They mentioned it was going to be the price of a new system. Well, not a new system, but it's a new platform. So I'm guessing it's not going to be less than $250, maybe as high as $350.
Yeah,
it's not going
to
be cheap.
I actually got a chance to play with the, I guess, PlayStation VR when I was at PAX. And it was cool. I mean, the light tracking that they had going with it was really, really easy, really smooth. And I didn't feel motion sick at all using it, which is surprising considering the game that I was playing required me to like move my head back and forth a lot. Which when I was messing with the Oculus Rift, I did get a little motion sick a couple years ago, so that's good that it's less than that. I haven't gotten a chance to really play with an Oculus that had the newest Oculus firmware and version, so that
yeah,
I haven't
the
really
latest
been,
SDK
with me moving my head around at least.
Hmm. So that's the big thing, I think. If they manage to make it not puke inducing. Put that as a feature on the box, will not make you puke. I think that's the biggest, the most important thing.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to trying it as well, but we'll see. And then they started announcing the games. Yes. And they opened with Bloodborne. There's an expansion coming on November 24.
I am really excited about that.
Yeah, so you're Bloodborne-er.
Yeah, I've checked a couple weeks ago, and I have like 120 hours or something like that in Bloodborne.
Oh, God,
I loved Bloodborne. It was actually my first Souls-like game that I played. And talking about it with the other guys on the site, it's kind of like a simpler version of the Dark Souls like mythos, but has like as far as the systems are concerned, but it still has that same like real visceral feel of the combat and the forcefulness of it. But they did say that this is like supposed to be two story DLCs that they kind of merged into one.
It was supposed to be two DLCs, and then they made it one. So
yeah, so it sounds like it's a pretty big new couple maps and stuff like that. So it'll be a good amount of, like maybe a 10-hour experience or something like that.
I didn't, I'm not big into Bloodborne, say the least, but I didn't check. I heard there were, like, are there new systems, new weapons, new things,
yeah,
or is it just like more
new weapons? They showed a bow in the trailer, which they didn't really show off like that other than firing a single arrow, so there wasn't much there. There was this really awesome, like, thing that you like had like a holding what looked like the wooden pole, and then you stuck it on the back and you pulled off a big like spinny blade that constantly spun as you used it. So definitely some new awesome looking weapons, so I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, that's cool. That you know, all more power to the people who like Bloodborne. It's not for me, but November 24th is going to be a happy day for all of the masochistic listeners among you. another thing that did a lot of noise was Gravity Days 2. For those who don't know, Gravity Days, or Gravity Rush as it's known in the West, it was probably the most celebrated title on the PS Vita. And people love it. Like it has a kind of a cult following. I tried it on my Vita and I didn't It was okay. I didn't play enough to get really into it. Maybe I should revisit it. A remastered version is going to be coming out on PS4 of the first one. And then in 2016, there's going to be the second one. I was hearing you approving. Have you played Gravity Days?
So Gravity Rush is what it was called in the US. So it was on PlayStation Plus on the Vita for like 3 or 4 months. And I downloaded it and I played a little bit of it, but it wasn't something that really captured me. But I think that was simply because, I wasn't like really into playing my Vita that much at the time. So I don't know, maybe the PS4 version will get me to just sit down and play it, 'cause it does seem to have some cool mechanics to it.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird game where you're actually gravity, you play with gravity, and it's weird. You play this female character that is flung into the city and like into the air, and you rush towards one wall, and you can run on the wall and then run on any wall because gravity doesn't affect you. And it's kind of weird, but I'm not sure how much of it is actual excellent gameplay, because for me it was a little bit confusing. Maybe I'm just an idiot. It's entirely possible, but it was a little bit confusing. So I'm not sure how much of it is like really cool original gameplay and how much of it is, this is a cool game, you know, this is a good game on our Vita, so we're gonna love it because there aren't many, and I love my Vita, but there aren't huge, you know, lots of exclusives on the Vita. So but it's definitely highly regarded enough that I'm going to be checking it out. There was like a you could sense the applause on Twitter when they announced Gravity Rush 2. It was definitely a game that people were hoping for. Everybody's golf. The next episode, it's sort of an open world golf game. It looked weird. I don't know if we need a new Everybody's Golf, but why not? Coming out in 2016. Again, from Software, Dark Souls 3 is coming out in April in the West. I'm going to try and give the information relevant for the West as much as possible, but all of this is aimed at the Japanese public, of course. So, as I might miss a date here or there. Dark Souls 3, for those people, there's like lots of new different things as well. It seems like they're taking the approach they took for weapons in Bloodborne and sort of applying a kind of similar philosophy in magic in Dark Souls.
They're also like, there's a lot of kind of assets and atmosphere that they took from Bloodborne and they're putting in Dark Souls 3. I played that at PAX as well, and I mean it felt very much like Dark Souls with a Bloodborne skin, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I think the Dark Souls fans are going to be, you know, disagreeing, but I guess it does. I'm not the biggest expert on Dark Souls, so I wouldn't dare to pass any kind of judgment on it. Sega announced Ryuga Gotoku Kenzan Kiwami, which is Yakuza, the Yakuza series. So Yakuza Kenzan Kiwami is like the Edge, so it's a remastered version of Yakuza Kenzan, coming out in January in Japan, and it includes a demo of Yakuza 6. So if you're into that series, you'll be happy to know that Yakuza 6 is going to be a PS4 exclusive coming out fall 2016. Capcom announced a weird little third-person shooter called Umbrella Corps. It's part of the 20-year anniversary for Biohazard Resident Evil. And it could be fun. I'm not sure Capcom is going to be the company I go to for my third-person shooter competitive type. But it's like a 3v3 and you have zombies that are everywhere around you. They're not very dangerous because you're like this badass, like special forces guy. But you have a zombie scrambler, so they don't see you, but then other people can destroy your scrambler and then the zombies start attacking you, or you have like grenades that will attract the zombies, so that will also enable you to play with that aspect of the environment. Like you can, if someone is hidden and camping in a corner and sniping everyone, you throw a grenade to them. And even if the grenade doesn't, you know, kill you, the zombies are all going to start going towards them. So that's 2016.
Yeah, it seems kind of cool. The only issue is that like hardcore Resident Evil fans are very displeased with this new announcement because it's been so long since they've had a good Resident Evil game, because RE6 was universally panned by most of the fans.
I'm wondering if maybe we shouldn't wait a little bit more, because I've been, you know, well, I'm an old Resident Evil fan from like the very beginning. It's kind of like Metal Gear Solid. I liked the first one. I tried to play the others and they were okay, but they were either plagued by terrible, terrible story, or like, you know, the second one was in that police station, which was clearly a manor that was turned into a police station where you could like solve puzzles of gems putting into eyes of statues. You're like, this is a police station. What are you doing? And then the later ones, some of them were good. I mean, Code Veronica, which was hated by everyone, I thought was pretty good. But then they took so long to adapt to a better type of gameplay. And you were still very stiff in the way you would play it, that I'm thinking, take your time, do something good. And when you're ready to announce it, do it. I'm not going to, you know, push them. Chunsoft announced new Danganronpa V3 for PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita. Danganronpa, if you haven't heard about this, it's kind of a... Mm-hmm. How can you describe...
It's a visual novel. It's another one of those visual novel games, kind of like Virtue's Last Rewards, the Zero Escape series. But the one issue that I had with them is that they only came out on Vita. There was no other real option.
Yeah,
this one's coming out on PlayStation 4.
It is coming out, yeah. And I think it's also on the cusp of it becoming a little bit more well-known in the West as well. When it came out on Vita, the second one, a lot of people started playing it. And it's this weird thing where you're supposed to be, like you're... it's a group of people and you have to stay until the end and all of the others die, and there's a tribunal and you have to prove that. I mean, it's a weird thing, but I didn't try it myself. I have to give it a try because it's certainly one of those undercurrent games that is making enough noise that it's probably an interesting take on something. But yeah, it's coming out. I don't think we had a date for that one. The anime fans will be happy to hear that there's a trailer for Attack on Titan. I mean, a gameplay trailer for the Attack on Titan game.
This one seems really cool.
Yeah? You like
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I was a huge fan of the anime and the manga as well. So, and the 3DS game that came out earlier this year in the US, just like, didn't seem like the kind of gameplay that I was really looking for. So I don't know. This seems definitely a lot more closer to what I was kind of envisioning.
It's an interesting one. I mean, Attack on Titan, for those who don't know what the anime is, it's basically all of humanity is in one last city, and basically they have giant walls around the city because you have these giants, the Titans, which are very large people that seem mindless, and they just show up and destroy everything and eat people. And in order to fight them, they have these weird hooks that make them look almost like Spider-Man, and they hook from building to building and slash the Titans with swords. And it seems like a type of gameplay that isn't easy to reproduce in a game. And the trailer, the game is not very pretty. Honestly, I think it kind of looked like shit a little bit. But they seem to be having that gameplay kind of equivalent to what you would think the anime would translate into. Like, it's a mix between some kind of Spider-Man-ish thing and a swords game, a slasher, and it could work. I'm not sure it's going to appeal to people who aren't already fan of the anime, but it could be a satisfactory experience for them.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly how it's going to control either. It seems like in the little bit of the gameplay things that they're showing in the trailer, it seems like it's kind of it tells you and puts the little spike things on where it wants to go, not really where you tell it to go, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it yeah, exactly. You have like you choose between different targets, and then you press the button and you rush towards it and you slash it or something like that.
Right.
But we'll see. We'll see. There's a game called Neo, which is a game by Koei Tecmo, which was first announced 12 years ago, or, well, 11 years ago. It's going to be coming out in 2016. It's a weird mix between basically Dark Souls and Ninja Gaiden and Onimusha, for those who remember those, and maybe even some a little bit of Witcher in there.
The guy looks like Geralt.
Yeah, yeah. The hero looks like Geralt, kind of. And it's just the reason we're talking about it is that it is really the fact that it's been so long, and it was supposed to come out on PlayStation 3 initially, and then, you know, it disappeared. And so anyway, it's an interesting one. What else? Final Fantasy 15. Final Fantasy 15 is... there wasn't a lot of new things in the trailers, but there were, like, they showed some chocobo riding and some fishing. The fishing, it was exactly what I thought it would be. It was a stupid mini game with fishing and whatever. The chocobo riding, however, I was very surprised that it looked fun. I thought it would be just like in every other Final Fantasy game. You have a giant chicken, you get on it, and then you move faster. But there was like acceleration, and like he was almost drifting, and yeah. It seems like it could be fun.
It looks like he's using it to like kind of jump around on the rocks and stuff, so there could be like hidden things in the environment that you could only get to via the chocobo. And yeah, it does. I see what you mean by the drifting and stuff that they kind of show. It does seem kind of neat, and it's something that the Final Fantasy series hasn't really done. And it's interesting because they have a car, but they're using chocobos to do their drifting. And
well, stuff. You have to have chocobos in Final Fantasy.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
There is also Persona 5, which again, it keeps being the one game that I think might break out a little bit. There's a couple of trailers that were shown, and it's still super beautiful. I mean, nothing new, but it's a game that has so much potential, and like the artistic direction is so different and interesting. I think it's a cool if you're into Japanese anything, this is a cool thing that you're going to experience. I think it's very Japanese and very like you live in Tokyo and you do stuff in Tokyo, and it's very, I don't know, it appeals to me for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, Persona 4 was actually a pretty big breakout hit in the US. I know that a lot of people are really looking forward to Persona 5.
Yeah, for sure. It's what we keep saying on the show. It's like this one could become Persona 4 is still kind of confidential. A lot of people play it, but I don't think the general public has tried it. Most people have heard about it now, so I think they're going to be interested in checking out Persona 5. There's a bunch of other games we're not necessarily going to go into. There's the Project Setsuna from Square's Tokyo RPG Factory. It's like super Japanese RPG. If that's your thing, you're going to be happy. Some Monster Hunter Dragon Quest Builders is going to come out in January, I think. It's basically Minecraft in Dragon Quest. So could be cool. But Minecraft is such an enormous success in Japan. It's a million seller. It was kind of unexpected. And it really took off in Japan. So that's Dragon Quest for, you know, people who like Minecraft. Metal Gear Online was showcased, and Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Future Chapter Prologue. Seriously, between this and Star Ocean Integrity and Faithlessness, the Japanese are showcasing their mastery at English titles.
Intense.
So, if you're into Kingdom Hearts, this is going to be a basically a prologue to Kingdom Hearts 3, which is a series of mix between games and full motion like videos that introduce what's been happening and what's happened and what's going to happen before the third episode. So
yeah, before this they had the 1.5 and 2.5 HD remixes, and so the only game that was missing out of that was the 3DS game Dream Drop Distance, and so this one has that plus an additional little extra story from the PlayStation Vita Birth by Sleep game. So
yeah, so it's a little bit more, and yeah, doesn't, again, not every game speaks to everyone, and this one doesn't speak to me, so. It's a little bit puzzling. You're like, this is what? And I imagine that's how people feel when I go like, oh, but in Street Fighter, you can like, you have the V skill when you press two buttons and it's amazing. And they're like, dude, it's Street Fighter.
Yeah, I think it's more for the fans of the series to kind of get themselves all caught up on anything that they might have missed versus bringing new people in, which I think is what Kingdom Hearts 3 itself is supposed to do.
Yeah. All right. So that's about it for the Tokyo Game Show. I think we've covered most of the important things. I don't think we've missed much. I'm sure you'll come and let us know if we have. But let's move on to the Apple TV that was announced a couple of weeks ago. And let's try and think about how it's going to be affecting the games industry, if at all. You know, it's going to be an Apple app ecosystem, and there are going to be lots of things that are going to happen on it, you know, lots of apps and lots of TV and lots of all of that. But they also did make a point of talking about games. And at first I was very skeptical. But I guess that it's a relatively powerful machine for a mobile machine. It's not obviously going to be giving you the graphics of a PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. But it also has this little remote that acts as a basically Wiimote. It has motion detection, and it also has a small touchpad on it that you can use for gaming as well. And so the games that were introduced, I think, are a little bit more convincing than I initially thought. There's going to be Skylanders, of course, Guitar Hero Live, Geometry Wars 3, Crossy Road with a multi, a co-op, well, not co-op, but multi-mode that looked super fun, Galaxy on Fire, which is honestly a good game, Beat Sports, which is kind of a sports game mixed with a music game. You like bat your bat at a baseball game in the right rhythm, and you use the motion controller for that. And a couple of others, including, you know, the Transistor, a bunch of iOS games are going to be adapted. What do you think? Is this going to make a dent? Is this going to change things? Or
I don't know. I mean, the price point is definitely interesting. I mean, for the, it seems kind of like Microsoft really wanted the Xbox One to be this like video streaming kind of thing, like TV box first and then a game console. And the PS4 made the approach of doing the opposite, which was the game consoles first, and then you could have your apps on it. But for the price point of $150, it seems like something that could possibly like very easily enter the ecosystem. I mean, if it's powerful enough to drive a lot of these games, then I think it could, at least for people, instead of sitting on their couches playing on their phones, they sit on their couches and play on their Apple TVs instead.
So, all right, let me give you the opposite argument. The people who play on iOS devices or even on, on Android devices are usually, not all the time, but usually people who are very casual. And the way I define casual is people who play when they have time to waste. And, you know, the core gamers are the people who actually make specific time to play. But the people who usually play on iOS devices are going to be people who play when they're in the, you know, in public transportation, they're queuing at the store or that kind of thing. Once they come back home, aren't they going to want to actually do the thing they like to do? Like, for example, watching TV and not play that stupid Candy Crush game at home on their big TV?
Yeah, I guess I'm curious to see if there's going to be any kind of multitasking kind of stuff in tvOS. Because I'm watching my TV show and a little thing pops up in the right corner. It's like, oh, look, you need to do such and such for your Farmville game or whatever. So you just do it real quick, like using your phone as the, that could be interesting. Excuse me. But I don't think there's actually any of that kind of multitasking functionality in there.
Well, maybe, I guess, but yeah, maybe if you can shrink your TV, the thing you're watching on TV, and then launch the thing on the device and do your updates on your farm or whatever it is on your, you know,
get your fallout shelter.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe, but then if it's about multitasking, you could do it on your phone as well. And do people do that? Maybe they do. But I think there is one strength with the system. It's that, first of all, so I don't think that super casual players are going to play. I think it's going to be the people who really just play Candy Crush for 15 minutes when they're on public transportation. I don't think they're going to play. But I think there might be a place, sort of an intermediary space for people who are not really big gamers, but that do enjoy gaming, that are going to have that thing already plugged in because of TV, because of all of their, you know, other apps. And they're going to see a game which is there that they might enjoy, maybe to play with their friends. There's a lot of party games type games there. And where the Wii failed, I think, in the long run, because people wouldn't come take it out because they bought it as a, you know, a party game, and they played it three times like they would Monopoly or Risk or whatever, and then stopped plugging it in. I think this one is always going to be in there. And the games have an opportunity to be not just $1 or free to play, or but because it's on your TV, psychologically, you're willing to pay $5 or $7 or $10. And so developers are going to have an opportunity to create that intermediary market, which is between the phones, which are super cheap games, and the high-end consoles for core gamers. I'm not sure it's going to happen, but I think it might.
Yeah, I mean, and the reason I mentioned the price point, $150, it does seem like something that could possibly jump into that kind of middle of the road, like you were saying, market that doesn't really want to buy a $350, $400 game console, but is willing to drop the $150 on something that could fill their TV viewing and have games on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it could work. The thing I'm the most excited about is to see whether or not developers are going to be managing to sell games for, like, to make a decent living, to pay, to make people pay $5 and not, you know, pull the $1 out of their grasp, a dying grasp, as, you know, because they don't want to pay for anything for their phone, so. There's also an interesting little tidbit about the app's size limit on the Apple TV, which is actually an app size limit on iOS in general. It's the app slicing, which basically, you know how, if you're a little bit technical, you remember how basically on iOS, your device manages your memory. So your live memory. So if you don't use an app for 2 or 3 hours, and if your phone needs the space in the RAM to launch another app, then it is going to decide to close the app you haven't used for a while. And there's been a lot of talk about that 200 megabytes file limit, which I didn't really understand at first, and I thought would be limiting to games. And I think for some games it might be limiting, but the way it works is actually pretty clever. So it's got to work like the RAM management, but for hard drive, quote-unquote, space for the Apple TV. So you download your initial app needs to be 200 megabytes maximum. And then you get the resources on demand. So you could download the app would download itself 200 megabytes, and then it needs 1 gigabyte of assets. It's going to download that immediately. So in effect, the app is not super restricted. However, if there is not enough space on your storage, if you're getting low on space, then the system is going to look at the assets that you've been using. And there might be an app that is, a game that has like 10 levels. And you've played through levels, you play level 1, 2, 3, and it downloads level 4, 5, 6. And you play 4, 5, 6, it levels 7, 8, 9. And then you download another app that needs some more space. The system is going to look at the initial game and it's going to see, oh, that game says that he hasn't used the slice for levels 1 through 3 in 6 months. And probably there's some priority and some logic there, but they're probably not going to be using them anymore. So I'm going to remove that and make space for the new app. And if they need them again, then they will re-download them. So that's the way it works in theory.
The one thing about this is that it's going to make more work for the developers that want to move their games to tvOS. Right now, like if you think about the bigger, more hardcore games that are on the phones and iPads, like Infinity Blade is the one they mentioned in this article. Those all kind of download everything in mass. So when you're developing for the tvOS, you kind of have to be able to shift the way your game is packaged so that it knows what needs to be downloaded at once. And that could possibly be a problem. I mean, unless Apple adds the functionality to download the extra stuff themselves in the App Store, then you have to find some way to host that. And you have to find some way to...
Oh, no. I think, if I'm not mistaken, all of it is still hosted on the App Store. So you don't, as a developer, you don't have to worry about... a lot. You do have to slice up your app and make it make some of the on-demand resources available and correctly tagged. So you do have to do that. And I'm guessing that for some games, some of the bigger, more serious games, it might even pose a problem. It might actually make some things like, I don't know, let's say you have a big game that where you can redo any level at any time. You leave it for like a month because you're busy and then you want to go back to it and go to the first level. Ooh, it's been erased because, you didn't have space anymore and another app took its place. So in some games, yes, I think it might be a problem. But I think for the way they're looking at it and for the vast... That's what Apple always does. They try to find a solution that fits the most people. And there are going to be some edge cases that are not going to be working in this case, but it still fits the most people. And so it's going to benefit that majority.
I was just going to say that I looked at the... I've been looking at the developer reference because I was kind of interested in seeing like what can be done with the with Apple TV and if there's a way to like say this is the highest priority, do not delete this or delete this at the very last minute or whatever, then that could be something cool. Like you mentioned the game that like you create a level or whatever.
Of course,
having the ability for the app to say do not delete this, like keep this here, or at least like keep it around until the very last possible minute or whatever, like giving it a higher priority could be something that could kind of help people kind of get around the problem of of the lack of persistency.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a something that works. I also think it's not going to work, as I was saying, for everyone. Like, let's imagine, let's go crazy and think there's going to be a game like Red Dead Revolver or Redemption, sorry, that comes out on the Apple TV. Obviously, that kind of system is going to be a problem for a game like that. Not just because it's huge, but because you're supposed to be able to go to any place of the game and so use any asset at any time. So if you have to wait and for it to re-download 1 gig of data when you want to go to that one place you haven't been in a while in the game, it's going to be a problem. But for games like, you know, all of the ones we've mentioned, games like Geometry Wars, Crossy Road, those are probably going to fit in the initial 200 megs. But so all of those, it's probably not going to be as big of a problem. And it's only, you have to keep in mind, if it doesn't need the space, it doesn't delete anything. It's only when it does need the space. So it's a way of trying to fit more into smaller storage spaces. And I suspect also because people install tons of stuff that they then don't use, right? You never go, well, I do because I'm OCD, but you never go through your phone and look at the apps that you don't use and you haven't used in, you know, 6 months or a year and go, oh, this one, I'm going to delete it. You leave it there because you think one day I might play that game. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I'm just a little concerned about like people with data caps. Because yeah, they're gonna, and especially because it's so like, I'm not sure how in the forefront on the UI it's going to be, like if it'll say, oh, I'm downloading the 1 gigabyte thing that I need right now or whatever, or if it'll just be a loading screen that just is spinning while it's downloading.
I'm not sure how it's gonna work. Stuff.
Yeah, that might need to be addressed.
Yeah, maybe you can turn it off completely, or like turn off the deletion of some apps, and then you have to go and delete things yourself. But that wouldn't be very Apple-like. Apple just wants to.
That's not Apple-like at all, exactly. Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm sure there are going to be, again, some edge cases where, yeah, in some games it's not going to work. For some people, it's going to be a nightmare. The data caps are going to be a moderate problem. I mean, I don't think the Apple TV is going to be downloading, you know, 100 gigs a month. It's going to be more, the streaming is probably going to be a lot more data than whatever game you're going to be downloading or re-downloading, unless you constantly switch games and you play like 5 of them at once and you switch between them all the time and it constantly has to re-download stuff. I would suspect data caps are high enough that this is not going to be affecting them majorly, but we'll see. Nintendo has a new president. And the one thing I wanted to mention, so he's been elected. His name is Tatsumi Kimishima. He's been elected for a year and is going to be renewed after a year. He's going to be continuing the policies that Iwata had put in place and the projects that he had put in place. They're still going to be doing Nintendo Directs, so that's okay. They're still going to be doing those silly little things. But the one thing that's really important is, first of all, he's not a developer, so he is a manager type person. He comes from a financial background. He's a Nintendo person, though. He went through the Pokemon company. He was president of Nintendo of America for a while before Regis Fils-Aimé. But he is 65. And so he's definitely not a young person. When Iwata was nominated by Yamauchi, he was supposed to be there for 30 years. You know, he was supposed to lead the company for a very long time. Kimishima is there for, you know, if we stretch it, I'm guessing 10 years if he stays. He's 65 already. I don't know that he's going to want to be staying there forever. Although Yamauchi was there, you know, until the end. But he was also involved in the family of the company. And so I'm thinking this probably means Iwata had a game plan. No pun intended. And he had everything down and everything was set. And Kimishima is just here to execute on that and make sure that he's able to, you know, he's a good manager. He knows the company. He was number four after Iwata, Miyamoto, and Takeda. Miyamoto and Takeda being the two co-presidents right now. Miyamoto, there's also reorganization. Miyamoto is going to be creative fellow, Takeda technology fellow. So they're going to be handling software and hardware. They're really the chiefs of the effective day-to-day things of the company, and Kimishima is going to be the head. Like, it's almost like they have three people to replace Iwata, that they needed three people to make. Well, you know, obviously Miyamoto was doing his thing in Takeda as well, but yeah, so Kimishima is a temporary, not temporary, it's going to be a few years at least, but he's not there for 30 years, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, he has some background in finance as well.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something Nintendo needs right now, maybe?
I mean, the Wii U is not selling lots.
Strapped for cash by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe they need someone with a little bit more financial mind to kind of steer them, as well as, I mean, having Miyamoto be the head of their game kind of area, and Takeda being head of the technology console kind of thing, seems like a pretty good organization, while Kimishima can kind of focus more on the financial side of the company.
Yeah, it's clean. It makes sense. And it's not like they're not strapped for cash, for sure. But it's the kind of thing, the terrible mess of the Wii U, which is not selling at all, is, well, I mean, it's 10 million, but for a console that's been out for, what, 3 years, it's not good. And it's not like it's not panic mode yet, but it's definitely, let's make sure we're not doing anything stupid mode, right? So they need to have someone who knows what he's doing. And yeah, I'm guessing that neither Miyamoto or Takeda wanted to be heads of the entire company. They didn't want those headaches. So yeah. Kimishima was like, all right, I'll do it. That's how I see that meeting happening. All right, that's about it for Nintendo. Let's now talk about Destiny. Are you ready for Destiny?
Go right ahead.
So, I am a pretty big Destiny fan. I've been enjoying the game since it came out. I didn't expect, well, I expected a lot of the game, and of course I was disappointed that it wasn't what I had hoped. I was disappointed it wasn't basically a very immersive world MMO. And MMO FPS, basically. And I don't think that the people who are still holding out for an immersive world are going to be liking the Destiny expansion, the Taken King, which came out last week. But there was another issue with Destiny, and it was the fact that it was not a very coherent single-player experience. It was, the story was not even convoluted. It was ridiculous. There was no story. It wasn't just that there was no story. It was that it did not make sense to the point that it's difficult to imagine anything. Like, just say 10 random words that come out in front of your mind, that come to your mind right now, and you're going to have something that makes about as much sense as the Destiny story. It was terrible. It was terrible. But as I've said many times on the show, the gameplay was excellent. The gameplay was super fun. The mechanics of shooting stuff was perfect. What they've done in The Taken King, and I didn't have huge hopes. I thought it was going to be more of vanilla Destiny in a very copy and paste manner. But they have improved a lot of things pretty dramatically. So we're still not into the immersive MMO type of thing. It's still very much a alone together. Let's, you know, do some dungeons. They're called strikes in the game, but do some dungeons together with random people. But most of the time I'm going to be hanging out somewhere and maybe I'm going to meet someone and do a quest together or go do an activity together. But it's not like, you know, an immersive world. So the people who want that, The Taken King is not for you. If you're looking, however, for a fun single-player progression and a very rewarding max-level experience, I think you might want to take another look at Destiny. I've often compared it to MMOs in general, but I think I was wrong. I think the thing that it relates the closest to in spirit and in game design is actually Diablo. I think this game, especially in its current implementation, is a hack and slash FPS. It's a Diablo FPS. You kill hordes and hordes of monsters. You feel insanely powerful. You feel like nothing can stop you. Of course, sometimes you do die, but it does feel very good to play and destroy all of those monsters that are being thrown at you, and you upgrade your gear. And that's basically all you do. Now, for the leveling experience, there's a story that actually makes sense. It's still dumb. You know, it's not like Academy Award story, but it makes sense. And there's so much humor. Like, you have the main character is, one of the characters is Cade, and he is played by Nathan Fillion, and he's so much fun. There's so much self-deprecation that, like, I literally laughed out loud. Maybe, you know, every half an hour I would laugh out loud. It was super fun. Like, let me give you just one example. You're supposed to go and get a open a door, and you need a tomb husk, which is this item, and you're supposed to find one. And your ghost, your little companion, is telling you, oh, I've scanned the door. To open it, you need the tomb husk. It's a super rare artifact that the Hive has been using for thousands of years, but they're really hard to find. And then you turn around, and there's a tomb husk. And he's like, oh, a tomb husk. And it's just, you know, it just falls completely at the right time, the right timing. Cade is this roguish type mentor of yours that keeps going, like, trying to explain some convoluted thing. And then he concludes the mission briefing by, like, so, yeah, basically just shoot them. And you're like, yes, this is exactly what the game... This is what I have been thinking about Destiny for a year. And they're acknowledging it and making it funny in bringing it back to me. So it's like, it's not taking itself seriously. It's super fun. Then you have the main quest. A lot of people are judging it by the main quest, which lasts like 4 hours. And you level to the level cap, which is level 40. And like, oh, so, you know, I was level 40 immediately. I finished the quest in 4 hours. This sucks. There's no content. But actually, the quests continue for, I must be 15 hours in. And I'm still, like, maybe halfway through all of the quests. It's super, there's lots of content, like, seriously. And I'm going to go into the list a little bit quicker now of why I really like it. The new superpowers, the supers, are incredibly fun. Like, the supers, basically in the game, you play PvE or PvP, and every 5 minutes or 4 minutes, you get your super, which makes you completely overpowered, right? It's, so every 5 minutes, you destroy everything and it feels super good. Except usually it's one action, like you throw your mega ball of death or you destroy the ground by, you know, slamming it with your fists and everyone around it dies. And it's this one thing. But the new abilities in the new expansion are channeled abilities that last for, you know, 15, 20 seconds. And my character is a warlock, and you have this Emperor Palpatine, like, lightning storm thing that you throw out of your hands, and everything around you is destroyed. And so every 5 minutes, you're like, you find the right spot where you have lots of enemies that are not too powerful, you know, too high health that you're going to be able to destroy them. And you rush into it and you're like, all right, now it's my moment. You effers are all going to die. And you activate your thing and you feel super, it's super fun. You feel super good about it. The gear structure has also been rethought. You get a lot more loot, so you're not chasing it. Again, the comparison with Diablo fits here. It's every time you kill a boss, the loot actually drops on the ground, and there's lots of it. Like, you will get lots of items that you can actually use throughout your leveling session and afterwards. The swords are a new type of weapon that, again, it's a heavy weapon, so you can't use it all the time, but it feels incredibly good. Like, you get into the fight and you slash everything. In an FPS, it's kind of unexpected, and it provides a great pacing because you always have something fun to do. When you're getting bored of shooting with one gun, you have another one. When you're getting bored of the second one, you have the sword. When you're getting bored of the sword, you have the super that's active, etc., etc. And it's a cycle, and it's super well paced, super, super fun. There are incredibly clever game design features. Like, one of the issues in vanilla was that you had to gather lots of materials to upgrade your weapons. And so first of all, they reduced the amount of material you needed, but also they gave one of the item slots an ability to actually track those resources on the map. So you select the one you want. You have to find it, of course, to find the item that tracks the right one. But once you do, you can actually track them on the map. So what that does is that it keeps you in the world, it keeps you playing, it keeps you engaged, and it makes that activity a lot more simple and a lot more fun. Because previously in the previous expansions, the way they had solved that issue was just that you could buy the material with some in-game currency. And that was, you know, a stopgap because it took you out of the world. The way you control your stats is very clever. You can choose which one you boost a little bit more, a little bit less, and it has effect on your the way you play. There's a new mechanic that is infusing a weapon. So in a game based on loot, which this one definitely is, when you have a cool weapon or a cool piece of gear, you don't necessarily want to get rid of it just because the next one has a better number of it. So what you can do here is that you keep that one piece of gear, but you infuse it with the power of the better one, and that initial one you like becomes better. So, for example, with my sword, I got my stupid little initial sword that wasn't very powerful because I waited till later in the game to get it, and it was not powerful enough for me to use it effectively. So I took other items that I had gathered in the meantime and infused their power into the sword. And the sword is still, you know, it doesn't have all of the abilities that I'm guessing later swords are going to be getting. Like, I only have one type of slash. I there are, you know, different things that the swords can do. But it's still competitive. I raised it to a level that makes it usable and not frustrating. A couple more things. There's randomness in the dungeons that is very effective, surprisingly effective. Some of the events as you progress through the dungeon are randomized, so it keeps it fresh. Even if you do the same dungeon twice in a row, you're still going to feel like a little bit different, and it works. I was skeptical, but it does work. And, you know, there are stupid little things. Like, if they give you much more ammo than they did before. It's not like you can use your special or heavy weapons all the time, but you can use them a lot more. And that plays into that cycle, that pace of making things a little bit less monotonous and a lot more fun. So yeah, I think this expansion is an unmitigated success. It is a heavy contender for Game of the Year for me with Batman. And again, I understand that people who did not like Destiny at first because they thought it was going to be an MMO, immersive world MMO, are not going to like this, probably. But those who kind of liked it and who thought it was a little bit, tedious or it didn't hold their interest for too long, I think, or if you like games like Diablo and FPSs, you could consider giving it another try. It is the best version. Like before this expansion, I would say it's the best version of an online cooperative FPS with a little bit of a caveat because I knew it wasn't perfect at everything it did. It's not perfect, but it's so good at doing that I'm not like ashamed to say it anymore. I think it's an honestly true to God good game. It is an excellent version of what it set out to do. So, yeah, I love Destiny. Well,
it's hard not to get excited to listen to you talk about it like that. I mean, I was one of the people that waited for early impressions before I did anything or bought the game at all. And so I kind of skipped it when it came out last year. Two of my friends are big, huge Destiny people. So I don't know. Maybe you might have convinced me to pick it up at least and give it a try.
So I have to try the initial leveling experience because the one I'm talking about is the from level 25 up, which is the expansion's leveling experience. If you buy the full box, you get a level 25 item. I'm sorry, level 25 boost. So you can start immediately there. It's still a bit expensive to buy everything together. I think it might be $80. So that's super expensive if you didn't have anything before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at there's the Legendary Edition on Amazon right now, and it includes the base game, the two expansions, and the Taken King, and it's $60.
Okay, that's not too bad. Yeah, it's the price of a regular game. Mm-hmm. So the initial leveling experience has been improved as well, but I don't know how much. So I wouldn't say that one is good as well before I've tried it. But
right.
Taken King on, so level 25 on, brilliant. I love it. So, you know, if you ever end up getting into it, please let me know if I've deceived you when you're horribly disappointed and angry.
I will make sure I let you know.
And the same goes for anyone listening to the show. I will be happy to receive your constructive criticism. Mario Maker, I've also tried that. It is... Yeah, so what do you think?
It is really neat to see what some people can do in that like kind of build, the framework that they've given you. I don't know if you've played any of the don't touch anything levels.
Yeah, that's kind of clever. Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool to, I mean, it's not really fun to play because you're not doing anything, but it's just getting in there and doing a couple of them. It's cool seeing how crazy stuff people do when in the kind of design that they had to have in mind as they were doing it so that they could do that, those kinds of things, especially when things that could kill you come like really close to hitting you, but not quite as you zoom by or whatever. It's cool. I also played a couple of the other levels that people do. Some of them were a little bit too hard for my liking. I kind of got frustrated, and
that's the fact that there's
no checkpointing in the game is kind of annoying. So, I mean, I would like the ability to have some kind of checkpointing so that I don't have to play through the entire level again, especially the ones that are super long and have like really complicated, hard puzzles at the very end. That kind of functionality just gets frustrating.
I agree. There's a little bit too much of a, well, first difficulty, but mostly I think most of the levels that are relatively enjoyable are puzzle-ish levels, right?
Yeah.
It's puzzles were like it's ways of using the gameplay mechanics that are actually make you go, huh, so how do I do that? And actually my first level is kind of a puzzle-ish thing as well. So I'm not sure it's a Mario experience. I do think that the initial, like the first 5 to 10 minutes, how they get you into playing and constructing your first little bit of a level is like when you first boot up the game, it's genius. It's game design at its best. It's incredible how they've compressed knowledge and ease of use and leading you on to where you need to be into those 5 minutes. This is Nintendo's mastery showcased right there. But ultimately, the levels, some of them are good. I mean, it is interesting and it is fun, and constructing the levels is surprisingly fun. I didn't think I was going to be into it, but it is fun. But yeah, I think there's too much difficulty and too much puzzliness, which is what we were fearing. And so I don't know how long I'm going to be playing it.
Yeah, the one thing that I kind of heard is that it kind of happened with other user-created level things like Little Big Planet was, at first, everyone kind of goes for the hardest of the hard.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years down the line, you get the gems that truly shine. And right now, you can sort by favorite or most favorited, but most of those are the ones that you don't touch anything or whatever. You just run right. For a game like Mario, I expect something that has me actually play it a little bit more than just running in a single direction. I mean, those games are kind of cool, but they're not something that really like wants me to keep playing more and more and more.
Yeah, maybe you know, I have it now. I think I'm going to keep it. I'm going to leave it there. There's going to be a lot of games coming in the holiday season. I might go back to it a little bit later and see what's been happening there. Or, you know, maybe launch it. It's not a game that I'm going to be playing, you know, 5 hours at a time. But maybe a small half an hour break here and there. It's the kind of experience that could be fun. Mm-hmm. Talking about Nintendo, Star Fox has been delayed to 2016. Yeah, I mean, it's good on them for, you know, making sure that the game is as good as it can be. It certainly was a disappointment visually when it was showcased a few months ago. But yeah, it's basically the Wii U has Star Fox and then Zelda, and that's it. And I've said it before, but I wouldn't be surprised if Zelda ends up being an NX, their next generation thing, title after all. So... Especially with this delay.
I wasn't sure if they're gonna like if the Zelda game was gonna be like what Twilight Princess was, where it was on the GameCube and the Wii at the same time. It seems like it's becoming more and more likely that that's gonna be the case because it just keeps getting closer and closer to the time when they really need to get the NX to do something. If it's not it, I think it'll probably be out in 2017.
It looks like it might, yeah. But I mean, they delayed Star Fox to 2016. They didn't say when, but I'm guessing it's not going to be January. But then they still do need something for. They're going to show the NX in probably around E3. I'm guessing announce it. I don't think it's going to be out the same year. Maybe it will. But if it isn't, they need something for the Wii U. In that, you know, second half of 2016, they can't not have anything.
Right. It does say Q1 2016 for Star Fox Zero.
So. Yeah. So we'll see. The Witness is going to arrive in January. And if you don't know what The Witness is, well, Ed is going to tell you because he sounds excited.
Yeah. So Braid was a game that came out on Xbox Live Arcade and PC. A couple of years back. I don't remember exactly when it was, but
Braid was a long time ago. It was 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah. So it was a puzzler game where you kind of also controlled time and you had the ability to kind of rewind time. And so through that, whenever you rewind time, your kind of character kind of stayed and continued doing the things that he was doing before. So you kind of had to control yourself and then control yourself again while your old self was doing the same actions before. So it was very mind bending and it was just an amazing puzzle game. It's very cheap on Steam. I've seen it go as low as a couple bucks, and I think it's definitely worth a try. But The Witness is supposed to be
just a word a word on Braid. It was hugely influential. It was, first of all, in that huge explosion of indie games that actually were interesting and clever and different. Uh-huh. It came out in 2008. And it was hugely influential. Like, you see these kinds of mechanics in lots of games now. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the first one that showcased it, or at least showcased it in that way. And it's been, you know, an inspiration for many, many designers.
Yeah, and so what I was going to mention is that Braid, it was originally like level based, so you had a single level that you kind of worked in, but the Witness is supposed to be more kind of open in a way, so that kind of like, if I don't know if you played it, Patrick, but the Talos Principle was,
I didn't play it, but yeah,
there are worlds that you go into that each have their own separated levels, but you could walk from one to the other very easily, and it was first person, but there's also ways to have the levels kind of interact with each other to unlock more difficult puzzles in a way. And so this is all open world. You could walk from one puzzle to another. It does seem something that's really, really cool. And if Jonathan Blow does enough with the puzzles that can kind of blow someone out of the water like it did with Braid with me, I mean, I'm really, really looking forward to this. And it comes out very early, January 26, 2016. And man, I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's definitely the kind of thing that people should give a try if you're at all interested in these kinds of things. If only because it's Jonathan Blow. And if he manages to make something, you know, he's gotten so high in the general consciousness of the game industry. It's like, if he manages to do something cool, he's going to become one of the, you know, game designers that everyone is going to be looking up to. Because you can do one hit and be like, oh, it's the guy that made Braid. But if he has two, it doesn't even need to be as good as Braid. It sets you there permanently. So,
and the game looks beautiful as well. I mean,
yeah,
the art style is incredible.
Yeah, it's very stylish. We'll see. January, at last. Couple of quick news. Uncharted Collection demo is coming out at the end of the month, September 29th, and it's going to be a little bit of Uncharted 2, which I think is the best part of the trilogy. So if you've never played Uncharted, I'm sure you're going to want to try that demo. The full release is going to be on October 7. Uncharted 4, I'm not sure we had the date, but it's December. The beta is going to start December 4. So if you want to try Uncharted 4, it's a multiplayer beta, so I'm not sure how interesting it's going to be. You wanted to talk about DLC for Uncharted?
Yeah, so a lot of people were kind of confused about the fact that they have already announced a single player DLC for Uncharted, and the article that I linked here was just talking about how they were so successful with Left Behind DLC for Last of Us, and having it be kind of a separated, its own story, that they kind of want to do that with Uncharted 4. And I mean, I loved Left Behind. It was a way to bring me back to that world and about characters that I really cared about in Last of Us. So if they do the same thing with the Uncharted 4 DLC, I don't really have a problem with it. I think some people were kind of miffed by the fact that they've already announced it, and they're already put it on the store even for people to pre-purchase, I guess. So some people were miffed about that, but that doesn't really bother me as much as just being excited about playing Uncharted 4 in the single player DLC is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the DLC, it's not like they do the game and then they finish the game and they're like, all right, we're going to start working on the DLC. Of course, it's planned before. It's often different teams that work on the things. And you're right, Naughty Dog's, I mean, the Left Behind DLC, it was so good, so good. It was you know, it made so much sense. It was a perfect complement to the original game. And I love the Uncharted series. And it's the kind of thing, if you love those games, I don't think there's any reason to not want to play a little bit more of it, especially if it's in the hand, the expert hands of Naughty Dog that does it really well. For example, I've loved Shadow of Mordor, and the DLCs weren't great. Even the Bright Lord DLC was it was not as good as the initial game. It felt a little bit forced. But yeah, so if they're going to be making that for Uncharted 4, if they're going to be making the quality of DLC that they had for The Last of Us, I don't think there's a good reason to not want it. So
yep.
It's one thing if the base game, if the main game is not, you know, satisfying enough because you feel like they've chopped a piece of it, right? In The Last of Us, it wasn't the case at all, so.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to... I think they're going to just repeat what The Last of Us did with Uncharted 4.
Yeah, hope so. All right, I think that's going to be it for us. I don't think there's much... I mean, there's a new Street Fighter V character called Karen, but I've sort of gone into Destiny for so long, I've indulged myself. Rocket League might be turned into a TV show, which is the weirdest thing I've heard in a couple of weeks. Shenmue 3, the Kickstarter campaign, is reopening. Basically, it's a, you know, different campaign, not on Kickstarter. What else? PlayStation 2 Classics might be showing up for PlayStation 4. I don't know if it's some kind of remastering or how they're doing it, but it asks the question of backwards compatibility. How are they doing it? But we'll know more, I guess, when they want to talk about it. That's just, you know, rumor-ish. I mean, we know they're coming out, but we don't know how it's going to be happening. And confirms that Konami is actually not doing any AAA titles anymore, which makes me sad. But we felt it coming. And it's not confirmed, it's rumor, but...
It was just weird that, I mean, you said it was not confirmed, but it was a thing that came out that they were not going to do it, and then they very wholeheartedly announced, like, no, we're going to do it, probably to keep their Metal Gear Solid 5 sales up.
Yeah.
As soon as Metal Gear 5 is out, they're just like, nah, we're done. Bye.
Yeah, it's not confirmed. It's basically, a few months ago, they did say, we're still committed to blah, 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 and Metal Gear and AAA, and apparently the reports we're getting are that, first of all, the guy who developed, is the architect of the Fox Engine, that costs so much, is not in the company anymore. People are saying that they're not actively working on any AAA game. They're just doing phone games. There's been denials from like CS people who were like, someone received a response from customer support, and they were like, oh, I don't know what's happening on the blogs. We've announced that we're still working on AAA games, but people seem to think that we're not. But it's a person from customer support, right? So
right.
I don't think they would know. So yeah, it's unclear, but it smells like they're not, which is what we were expecting. So Anyway, I guess that's going to be it for Pixels. Thank you so much for being on the show, Ed. It was great fun.
Yeah. I mean, just having the conversation between with all the different things that we talked about was really cool. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Would you tell people on the internet where they can find you if they wish to find you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Edesis, that's E-D-E-E-S-I-S, and you can also kind of follow my more behind-the-scenes exploits with 4Player Network. And but if you enjoy four guys that are sitting in a room talking with each other about the video game news and impressions, they like to really focus heavily on the impressions. So if you're into that kind of thing and you want to kind of discover new things, then I definitely give them a try. They're over at 4playernetwork.com.
And I really hope that they like Destiny or they'll be hearing from me. All right. I'm not Patrick on Twitter. I'm also not Patrick on Facebook. You can find me at both of those. You can also find this show at frenchspin.com. And you'll also find the Phileas Club over there, which is a show where I get people from different countries in the world. And we discuss the news from the past month. And we have a lot of fun doing it. It's actually enlightening, if I dare say so myself. It is also my birthday, so if you want to come over on... Oh, thank you, Ed. Oh, you remembered. If you want to come and wish me happy birthday, probably late because you're not going to be listening to this immediately, you can do so. Or, you know what? Let's institute September 21st as Hug Day. And for my birthday, you have to go hug someone you love. There you go. That's a much nicer thing. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. And until then, have an excellent time hugging people you love. Bye.
I'm going to go buy a plane ticket to Paris so I can go hug Patrick.